Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. The summer months are here and much of the state is holding its breath as we enter wildfire season. There's no denying the facts. This year is expected to be hotter and drier, a recipe for potentially devastating fires in a state that is still recovering from years of the same. Governor Kotek has already declared a state of emergency and the season is barely underway. So how can you prepare and what is the state doing to respond? Here to help us answer those questions, Oregon State Fire Marshal Mariana Ruiz Temple. She's served in that role since 2020. She oversees statewide fire and emergency response, including three incident management teams, and advises the governor on the Emergency Conflagration Act. She also sits on the executive boards of both the National Fire Protection Association and the National Association of State Fire Marshals. Mariana Ruiz Temple, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Yeah, thanks. Let's get right to it. Oregon's already seen hundreds of fires, and it's so early in the season, most of them small and extinguished now, but there have been some evacuations, and we're just finished up our first heat wave as well. How do you see what's happening right now compared to the same time in recent years past?
Yeah, good question. I think what we're experiencing, if you maybe asked me 2 weeks ago, it might be different than asking me today. Just in the last 48 hours, we've seen a pretty significant uptick, as we have predicted, you know, with those fire watches, red flag warnings. But certainly in the Umatilla counties and Eastern Oregon, just yesterday, we saw a pretty significant fire right outside of Spokane, so in our geographic area. And like you said, they're regional events, but they're really good indicators of what we can expect to see next week when we have another heat wave. So I would say it's pretty early. We did expect to see these kinds of fires, but it's been a pretty significant impact in terms of like the uptick in the last, you know, 72 hours or so.
Yeah. You mentioned that Spokane fire took some homes too, and that's your area to protect. It must really raise some flags for you to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What specifically are you keeping a close eye on? I mean, we've terrible snowpack and drought declarations across the state and a lot of counties. What are you looking at most right now that's concerning?
Yeah, there's a few indicators that we are taking a look at. We're definitely looking at the drought and the persistent drought across the area. You also put over that overlay of, like you talked about, the you know, in terms of the snowpack and that snow water equivalent, it's the lowest we've seen since 1981. You overlay that with the transition from La Nina to El Nino, which means warmer and drier. Mm. And all of those things point to an earlier fire season, which we've seen, and a longer fire season, which is concerning when we take a look at the types of conditions and the fires that we're already seeing.
And the geography of the state is quite different. We've got great variety here. Are there things that you're seeing, like certain areas where you're staging resources now because of what you see? Or how does that kind of play out as you prepare?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're currently not staging resources, but we work within a system with our federal partners, and our other state partners, where we enter this rhythm of meetings and a cadence. And what that does is help us set priorities and objectives and operationalize those on the ground. Weather is a big part of it. And that does tell us if we see a reduced slowdown of capacity and significant weather, we make those decisions to move resources around the state. Currently, that's being handled at a regional and local level, but we are entering into that cadence of planning with our federal partners and our regional partners in Washington to help us make those decisions. And we certainly have those tools at our fingertips if needed.
Yeah, you mentioned Governor Kotek has declared a state of emergency this week. What does that really unlock in practical terms for you?
Yeah, the state of emergency really unlocks certain state-to-state agreements that need to be, that are in place, but you need the trigger of the actual declaration to get to that. For the Oregon Department of Forestry, it allows them to use National Guard resources and aviation. And, you know, in my previous years and previous decades, we might wait till an actual event called for it. But by doing this, it removes those obstacles out of the way should a significant fire happen that we need to access it. So it just removes obstacles and speeds up the process.
And it really is telling that the governor has already done this. As you said, there's not an emergency out there burning at the moment, but to have the state of emergency in place, what does that tell you about how you and the governor and others involved, how seriously you're taking this upcoming fire season that we're just starting?
We're taking it very serious. I think all Oregonians should take it very serious. As we said, this El Nino the snow water equivalent. When we look at what we call analog years or like years, we're really looking to 2015 and 2018 to be similar years to what we can expect. And having all those tools in place, we know 15 was the first year where Oregon saw a pretty significant devastating fire that took 73 structures. First time that's ever happened.
Right.
2018 was a long extended fire. So having those analog years and having things like the declaration in place and removing that speeds up our process and puts us in a better position should we have a fire like that or ongoing season like that.
Yeah, you don't have to wait.
Yep.
Is the state where it needs to be at this point with resources and training and personnel equipment to take this on?
Yeah, great question. We get this question a lot.
Yeah.
Both your ODF, which is the State Wildland Resource Agency, as well as ODF or OSFM, we plan, we prepare, and we do that all year round. It's not just during the time of wildfire. We also represent our 305 fire districts and 11,000 structural firefighters. On the ODF side, the wildland contractors and wildland firefighters. All of what I would say about that is there's never going to be enough firefighters in Oregon to handle the kind of conditions that we see in the fires. But we are planned, we're trained, and we're ready. And, just waiting to see what, fire season brings. And then we do have those relationships and agreements with other states if we need additional resources.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like that happens more and more these days that we go help others, they help us. And that's just kind of speaks to the magnitude of the kind of fires that we have these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I want you to go ahead and, for our viewers who may not know, the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office and the Department of Forestry, two different entities, but you have different responsibilities. Kind of describe that for us and how you work together.
Yeah. So the Oregon Department of Forestry has a large portfolio as it relates to wildfire and suppression. They have protection for wildfire across 16 million acres of land. That's ODF protected lands. The Department of State Fire Marshal has responsibility to protect people and property from fire across the entire state, really in the built environment, in communities, in our fire districts. And so when you have two state agencies that can come together and multiply that effort, you really have an umbrella approach to all hazards, and in this case, wildfire. And so we consider ourselves what we say is emergency support function four. Every emergency has different functions, and four represents firefighting. And so to have the power and the capacity of ODF and the power and the capacity of OSFM and our local resources, it creates a layer of sophistication and protection that not a lot of other states have. And so that is how we integrate at the state level, using all those resources that we have to come to bear.
That's a really interesting breakdown. So the Oregonians should be pleased that we have that, I take it.
Yeah. I, as an Oregonian, am pleased to have it, for sure.
Something our meteorologists have raised kind of struck with me, that we may be entering a kind of a permanent shift where Oregon summers are just warmer, drier, they last longer, regardless of how much precipitation we get in the winter even. Mm-hmm. If that's the new baseline, or at least where we're heading, how do you plan for what feels like a kind of an endless cycle of wildfire season now?
Mm-hmm. Great question. And that just speaks to the nature of an all hazards structural fire service, as I indicated on our side. We see, the number one cause of fires in Oregon is vegetation fires. So burn, debris fires. And I think a lot of times we see that in the spring, if you will.
So sure.
Shoulder seasons and early June, when people are not thinking of the traditional, 30 years of what a fire season might have felt like. Mm-hmm. 30 years. Just in March, we had level 3 evacuations outside of Lapine. We're seeing more and more of those over the last month. And what I think we know is that we need to be prepared all of the time. And I do think back to when we looked at wildfire out of a natural resource lens, where something might be a fire burning in our forests, but we're seeing fires in and around communities. We're seeing them earlier. And I think the mindset, not only for the systems that protect Oregonians, but ourselves as Oregonians, that mindset has to be there for prevention 24/7.
Right. And that's incumbent upon all of us to be aware of that. So if you're used to burning your slash piles in spring, maybe you can't anymore if it's getting into where fire season can take off.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it seems like in recent years, seems like we're getting to fires faster. I don't know if that's true. It's how it feels. Has the strategy changed, or is there better technology and equipment? What's the difference from 10 to 20 years ago in getting to those fires and getting on them?
Yeah, great question. certainly we have more tools and we have more attention, and fires are actually occurring more and more in and around communities, as I said. I think there has been a slow shift to the realization that we likely were working off of a 1995 response model for a 2020 problem. Mm-hmm. And our Oregon legislature at the local level and at the federal level really started to take a look at how do you elevate the conversation about community preparedness. And so to really get out of that lens of natural resource only forest type fires. And so there was a lot of attention on how we can help bolster capacity. And so a couple things that we were able to do is we have a state engine program where we were able to place engines strategically across the state, mainly in our frontier counties and our rural community counties, where if they can get on that fire sooner, where we know incidents are second save lives and property, that's one way. We also overlaid that with an upstaffing grant, which brings about 1,500 structural firefighters during fire season, so that June to October. And our hope is that they can keep fire small and away from community. So that was a significant investment from an Oregon legislature.
Well, I'll say.
The Oregon Department of Forestry just launched last week their multi-mission aircraft, which is a new tool that we're excited that our partners have that let us view fire at night, help us do mapping, and help us get intel. Our networks of cameras also. All of these are new, innovative technology-based programs and capacity programs that should bolster our response. And we've seen where seconds have saved a fire that was in the same conditions, same temperature, and one fire go about 10,000 acres and one's 800. The efficacy of those programs are what we're tracking, and they do make a difference.
They are working. Talk about the fire cameras a little bit more, because that really does give you eyes on the terrain, and see a start, you can get on it.
Yeah. The cameras, you know, the old days when we used to think about fire towers, for example, and people living up there, you know, what we are able to use through technology, the network that Oregon Department of Forestry has, but also with our private public partnerships that the state has, is we're able to feed all of those cameras into our common operating picture, if you will, and we're able to use them. Mainly in the Oregon Department of Forestry network, they have staff and equipment, and they're able to see fires when they're small, see smokes after maybe a dry lightning storm, for example. But the community has access to these cameras as well. But we're able to monitor it. It helps us make a decision about, is it a hostile fire? Is it not a hostile fire? Can we get equipment in there? And so having that technology where you can see it in a way that helps you operationalize your plan is a big difference. And it's like the emerging conversation that we're having across the West in terms of how do we bring public-private partnership into that conversation, and satellite feeds as well.
Yep, absolutely. Let's talk about fires that are weather-driven versus human-caused. We know the vast majority of fires are started by humans, like 85% or so for wildfires. It just seems amazing to me. Recently in Southwest Washington, clear skies, beautiful day. Fire started, human caused, obviously. Is that a trend, or are we just sitting at about the same level and people just need to really be shocked by that and do something about it?
I hope people are shocked by it. Yeah. The trend is around 75 to 85% of the wildfires we see in Oregon are human caused. And I was just having this conversation the other night about how do we get ahead of that trend. When we have about 25% that's caused by lightning, if you will, and 75%, that tells me we can make a difference. That tells us we can get in front of it. And we see fires just yesterday in Roseburg, where somebody was mowing their lawn in the afternoon.
Yep.
That is somebody probably didn't plan for that, thinking that they weren't going to start a fire, and they do. We see people with chains. We see people pull over in high grass. All of the fires we're seeing in the Umatilla country all started in one way, shape, or form by humans. That is actually something that we can harness. So that's why I really appreciate this conversation. If there's one thing that we can do, is know the restrictions, be a little bit smarter with the activities that you're doing, and don't wait for red flag warning days or fire watch. We should be doing that now.
Yeah, be smart. Yeah. One spark is all it takes.
One spark is all it takes.
You know, we've seen significant staffing cuts to both BLM and Forest Service, federal cuts to their staffing. What's the real world impact for Oregon about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get that question a lot. We coordinate daily during fire season and throughout the year with our federal partners. What we're being told by our federal partners is that they are staffed and even a little bit of an uptick in staffing when it comes to fire suppression. So for us going into fire season in the region, I consider that a good thing. We have a great relationship with them. I think we're all watching the federal conversation that's happening in terms of merging the U.S. Forest Service into the U.S. Mm-hmm. Wildland Agency. I think when there's uncertainty, there's also opportunity. And so we're waiting to see what that does. But in terms of fire suppression, we're hearing from our partners that they're staffed, they're ready. And we are actually just meeting as we speak today to talk about that, how we're going to cooperate and plan and train right now, but also then how we would move that into fire season.
Well, I'm glad it's that's the word and that the gears are in motion to have everybody working together. Just about 3 minutes left. I just want to ask you, I mean, how do you work on the local level? Then you talk about the federal assistance, but you're constantly must be working with departments of emergency management, counties, getting their work with you. How does that work?
Yeah, as it relates to community wildfire risk reduction, a big focus of our work is working with Oregonians, with CBOs, with communities. And that is, what can you do to protect yourself and your property? And so a large portion of our work is talking about actions that we can take as Oregonians. And if you're interested in that, please go to our website, Google Defensible Space. And that is, what can we do that's tangible? As it relates to communities, we have responsibility through the Oregon Fire Mutual Aid System to mobilize the local fire service. And so it's our responsibility to make sure Oregon has a healthy mutual aid system. We do that through governance, planning, capacity, like I just said, grants. And we want to make sure that we have a healthy mutual aid system that works for Portland, that works for Southeast Oregon, that also works for Ontario, Oregon. And I am really pleased with the level of attention that our fire service has done over the last year, but certainly since 2020, is the awareness that it can happen anywhere, the awareness that fires are moving north and west, the awareness that it's happening to Oregonians that maybe have not had to live with fire. That is our reality. And it really takes a whole of community to help with that message.
Yep, and education hopefully translates to action. Just like a minute and a half left, what do you want people, what do you want Oregonians to know the most about what they can do to help protect their property, their lives, and those of others?
Yeah, the most important thing is sign up for oralert.oregon, oralert.gov. I'm signed up in 4 different counties. So if you're recreating or you live somewhere, that's the one thing you can do to give yourself the necessary seconds to get out or to evacuate. If there's nothing more than that, that's the one thing I would say. Before you choose to burn, go to beforeyouburn.org and sign up for those alerts. And lastly, defensible space. You can help play a role in your own protection. Open your front door, look at the 0 to 5 feet outside, remove any combustible material, vegetation, give your property a chance at survival. And those are things we can all do that are free right now, that we can help not only our firefighters, but also your whole community.
Absolutely. And where do they go for more on that?
Go to defensiblespace.oregon or Google the Oregon Department of State Fire Marshal, and you'll have all of our resources there.
Right. Well, we wish you and all the firefighters across the state and the country the best, and good luck with this fire season as it gets going.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Mariana Ruiz Temple, thanks so much for joining us, Chief.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Now we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, an inside look at how Red Cross Cascades is preparing to respond for when wildfire strikes. Stay with us. Welcome back. When disaster strikes, the Red Cross responds. It is a global humanitarian network with tens of millions of members and volunteers. Here locally, the Red Cross Cascades region sends help across the country and even outside the U.S. Right now, it is preparing for this fire season to help fire victims in the Pacific Northwest. We visited with them to hear more about it. Well, we're here with Rebecca Marshall with the American Red Cross at the North Portland headquarters. Thanks for having us over here.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Wildfire season, it's really already begun. The Red Cross responds to wildfires. Talk about how you do that, how you prepare, and what you do to go help fire victims.
We prepare all year round for this time of the year. We know this is coming, right? Every summer we see a lot of wildfires. And so we're working with our partners right now to say, hey, what do you need from us? Where can we help? what, you know, getting our volunteers ready on standby so they can be ready at a moment's notice. We're just making sure all those boxes are checked.
What are you hearing about what this situation is going to be like this year?
Same thing you are. It's going to be a pretty rough one, we're hearing. Very dry already. We've already heard of level 3 evacuations, so it's coming. It's coming earlier. But we're ready. We're ready either way. That's the good news, Tim. If there's hardly any shelters or dozens and dozens, we'll be ready.
But you've got them positioned all over the state.
We do. We have 50 shelter trailers that are all over the state, pre-positioned, so we can respond at a moment's notice. I'm talking every corner of the state, because we don't know when the wildfire is going to break out or where it's going to break out.
Right. And wildfires, they can just eat up, you know, tens of thousands of acres. But when they get into communities, that's where the Red Cross really comes to play.
Exactly. The key for us, level 3 evacuations. The second we hear level 3 evacuations, we're talking to the county emergency managers. Hey, what do you need from us? If they want us to open up a shelter, we get on the phone and we call those volunteers. We get this trailer hitched up and we take it to the shelter location.
Yeah. Well, let's show it off, shall we? That's why we're here at the headquarters. Yeah, this is, tell us what we're looking at.
Okay. So this is basically what you'll see all over the state. Inside, we have cots, we have kitchen canteening supplies, cleanup kits, batteries, gloves, first aid kits, signage, just about everything that you would need to put into a shelter. And some of these boxes, you'll see that they're sealed because our volunteers take things very seriously and they make sure that if the box is sealed, that inventory is inside the box. It's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific. Thank you for that. And we're going to introduce Kim Falk now, who's an American Red Cross volunteer here. And this is, you kind of manage the shelter trailers. Is that right?
Yeah.
You've been at this since 2020.
2020, I guess.
So you got quite an initiation with our 2020 wildfires.
Love it.
Yeah. What's the importance of these trailers that are supplied to go and help people at the fire scene?
This is what opens our shelters. It's got everything that we need. Our cots, our blankets. We don't have food, of course, but we have just cleanup kits and. What these red buckets are for is for, we call them cleanup kits, so the community can get those and clean out if they have a flood or whatever, they can start cleaning up their residence.
What's it like for you when you've gone and done this on site and the response you get from people? Talk about that a little bit.
To me, it changed my life, really. Seriously, my first one was... just a game changer. And what changes for me, I think, is just seeing a family or a person that comes in just with nothing. They've lost their reality. They've lost everything. And for us as Red Cross workers can make their day a little bit better, give them a little bit more hope, and just know that we've got their back and we're here to help them out. I love it. I love it.
Hard work, but rewarding.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
It's hard work, but you get up and you do it again. It's for me, it's called my internal bank.
Well, you're a great person to promote the idea of volunteering with the Red Cross, aren't you?
Absolutely. Even if you don't have too much time, there's always something to do with the Red Cross. And now that it's fire season, come on, we got work for you to do, and it'll change your life. It's amazing. It's amazing what giving to your brother or sister does for your soul. So that's why I love to do it. And I love to see what Red Cross does for the families.
That's so wonderful.
Calling the Calvaries, and we take care of them.
Thank you for sharing that. Appreciate it. Yeah. Rebecca, we're going to bring you back in just to close this up. I mean, what do people need to know about how they can get involved and volunteer?
Really simple. One location, redcross.org. You can go there. You can learn how you can sign up to volunteer. It's very simple. The training is free, so you don't have to pay anything. We want you to come in and train. You can make a donation there. You can donate blood there. You can sign up for all those things at redcross.org.
Wow. And what's your hope for this wildfire season that we're in now?
I see Kim. Kim inspires me. She inspires all of us. I hope it's quiet. I always hope it's quiet. It rarely is. So we're ready either way, Tim. If we get the call, we'll show up.
Rebecca Marshall with the American Red Cross, Cascades Division, here in Portland, but spread out throughout our area. We sure appreciate the work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. During this program, both the State Fire Marshal and the Red Cross talked about important information available to you online to learn more about wildfire preparedness and how you can help yourself and your community stay safe. We have the links in our story at kgw.com. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And a reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Download the free TV app, KGW Plus, available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We'll see you back here next week.